the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. We're going to talk Ray's birthday. I'm 40. We're going to talk a little bit about abortion here in the state of North Carolina and the veto that happened today by Governor Cooper of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. And we'll touch on the Mueller report. So, Brooke, how's it going today? It was my birthday. We went out to lunch. We had fun.
Yes.
We met up with some friends. And how are you doing today? How are you preparing for this final week of Holy Week?
Ooh, okay, yeah, so you're right. This has been, it's felt like quite the holy week indeed. You know, just throughout this week when it kicked off with the somber event of Notre Dame starting to, catching fire, and, you know, just some major losses there, I think that it was a reminder for me of just the importance of the eternal rather than the temporary, and even as beautiful as Notre Dame is, how temporary it was. Yeah. So anyways, you know, that's something that I think this has been a week of reflection, but it's also been a really good week. My son's birthday is this weekend as well, and so we're celebrating his 13th, and so looking forward to that and having a lot of fun celebrating with you today. And
your son's going to be a teenager.
Oh
man, you have two teenagers right now?
I will have two teenagers once he turns 13 on Saturday.
Wow, that's going to be stressful.
It already is.
Yeah, you
know what?
Kids.
Raising teens is so good, though, in many, many ways. So there are challenges, but on the other hand, they're starting to come into their own and grow up, and
you
enjoy some of the same things. So you have some similar interests. And so it's fun to be able to do that rather than like them begging you to play Legos with them, which you do as a good parent. Right. But
I do chalk. As
together.
A 40-year-old, I play with chalk with my son James in the driveway. We draw and. Yeah, sometimes
yes.
I'm like, this is not really what I want to be doing. But you do it because you love your child.
Right.
And you'd rather spend time with your child than sort of just do your own thing.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, we make those sacrifices for our children. But so that is one part of them growing up that's a lot of fun because they enjoy some of the same things you
sometimes
do.
Sometimes James takes the chalk from me and he's like, mine.
I was like, really? Like the Nemo bird?
You can't even share a piece of chalk? He's like, mine.
Us humans, we're a bunch of sinners.
Right.
But hey, so I want to hear from you and find out, how does it feel to be 40 now?
I feel a little bit older, but I'm not freaking out. I think when I was 30, I didn't freak out either. But when I turned 31, and I don't know if this was because I wasn't married yet at 31, but I had a little bit of more of a freak out. It impacted me a little bit more turning 31 than it did 30. So I wonder if 41 will have the same effect. I don't feel like I'm being weighed down because of an arbitrary number, so to speak.
So you're not like ready to sign up for AARP or start asking
for
senior citizens discount?
No, I mean, I'd like a discount if I can get one any way I can, but I probably won't ask for it. Unless my hair goes a little bit more grayer, I probably can get away with it. We'll see.
Yeah, you can get some hair dye and dye it a little
grayer. I'm just going to keep it. I think people see you as very, you have a lot more authority and wisdom if you have gray hair.
That's true.
So remember that, Brooke.
Next time I go to the hairdresser, get my gray streak there. So you wrote something on the podcast, or not the podcast, we're on the podcast, but you wrote it on the blog about turning 40 and just some reflections as a 40-year-old conservative. So why don't you share with us, what are some of the things that you've just felt like have become even more important to you?
I just wanted to touch a little bit upon how much our world and country has changed. Obviously, sometimes we glamorize the past and we look at the past and we say, oh, that was such a great time, or life was so much better or simpler in the 1950s or 1940s or something. Obviously it wasn't the 40s because you had major world war going on, but people sometimes glamorize decades and say it's a little bit better back then, it was simpler, or people were friendlier, and some of those things might be true to some extent. But I looked at, I think I lived in a world in the 1980s that was much more black or white than it is today in terms of right or wrong, even though you had a lot of problems going around in the world, of course, in many ways more problems than you have now. But we lived in a country that I think was, to some degree, was still more unified, even though of course you had liberals and you had conservatives then. There seemed to be a unification, and part of this was because the whole Cold War era we lived in, there still was this idea of defending Western freedom that was very prevalent in large parts of the West, and I think we are losing some of that. As we've kind of lost our identity as a nation, and as sort of Western freedom has eroded. Some people don't even think we should be defending it in any way anymore, or to let it erode. And it's just kind of, I thought it was kind of weird. Sometimes I think about, we've lived through this time, you know, everybody's lived through different eras, but we're kind of in this time where the West is collapsing in on itself to some degree, where we don't, where we just sort of doubt our own credentials, and people don't really want to defend these Western values that we've had for so long. And so we're actually living through that era now, and it's kind of interesting that we're living through this collapse of the West.
Yeah, well, and I think part of it is, it stems from this difficulty that many have in today's modern era. Maybe in generations past they struggled with this too, but understanding and accepting that beautiful and, you know, hideous things can come out of the same time period. And right. So they have a hard time understanding that the same generations that gave us chattel slavery could also come up with the Declaration of Independence, right, and the Bill of Rights, and realizing that mankind, we as humans are capable of incredible things, but we're also capable of extremely horrific things. And so being able to navigate that is very messy. And if people don't understand how to think critically about this, then they do feel this need to apologize, right, for Western culture. But I think something that happened when people were watching Notre Dame burn was that they were realizing that there are treasures worth preserving out of this time period and our civilization. And there is more to it than just, you know, the negative.
You think there's like a deeper yearning, as, you know, many of us watched the Notre Dame Cathedral just in flames, and you saw part of that roof completely collapse and the cathedral. Do you think that there was, you know, some of that mourning? Obviously, you know, you've got traditional conservative Catholics and just conservative Christians in general who I think understand it at a deeper level. But do you think there was a lot of people out there, they were mourning, but they really weren't sure why they were mourning? They're yearning for something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they don't know exactly what they're yearning for, but there's this emptiness or void in their life, and they see something like that. And they know that something's missing from their life, but they don't know how to fill that void, and they see something kind of eroding, and it is a mournful for them as well.
Yeah, that's a really good observation, and I think you hit the nail on the head. These are, people are seeing this, and they can't really put into words why they want to sing Ave Maria, and they want to, they're crying, and they feel like a deep sense of loss, although they may have a difficult time articulating why. Mm. But I believe that's because we're designed in many ways to crave and be drawn to the true, the good, and the beautiful. Mm. And it is something that we aspire to. We're an aspiring, aspirational species. Like, that's what we want. We want to, the spires in a cathedral, like, we see that and we realize subtly or maybe subconsciously that's pointing us upwards. We look up to the sky and there's a yearning for eternity. Mm-hmm. And that helps connect us with the transcendent. And so I think that that is hopefully something that, as Notre Dame is rebuilt, maybe there will be like a collective reawakening, at least in France and Paris, where they're seeing this on a daily basis and they're coming together to do this, that there are things that are, their beauty is not just objective or right, subjective, it's objective, and these beautiful things are worth preserving.
Yeah, I think that's one of the, some of the greatest time periods of Western civilization. I mean, I love Baroque music. I love composers like Handel, and the way, some of the most inspiring things to me is when they were inspired by God to do these great things, right? Because they know, even though they were great artists, they know they couldn't do it by themselves or out of themselves only. And so they were inspired in terms of trying to reach the heavens and trying to do things that were, you know, otherworldly, inspired these great things of architecture and music, and that we couldn't even do today necessarily, because, you know, we don't have that external factor, I think, inspiring so many artists or so many people who are involved in the public square in different ways. And so to me, that's a big deal. And just the Notre Dame thing too, I mean, just, you know, we've lost a sense of beauty just in general, I feel like, as a culture to some degree. What is truly beautiful and what truly can move mm-hmm. people into doing yeah. great things. And it's kind of sad to see, because yeah. you know, we've almost gone to this a little bit more of a generic culture where all things are somewhat the same, or we try to be a little bit hodgepodge. And part of that's natural because it comes through the internet, or just the communities are more overlapped now. And so, you know, I kind of look out on the world and you miss some of that uniqueness or mystiqueness. And I know it's out there, but sometimes we don't see it or have the ears to listen to it in this era.
That's a good point. And yeah, I would say that we're afraid to say that beauty is objective. And I would say also that sometimes when we hear the word beauty, we think that it has to be elaborate, like Notre Dame or something like that. And there's also beauty, though, in simplicity. And I was reading an article the other day about from Matt Walsh, which I don't agree with him on everything. He can be a bit of a firebrand sometimes. But I really liked what he was talking about with regard to churches and how we don't make beautiful churches anymore. And he even pointed back to, like, the churches back in, let's say, the 1800s in Pennsylvania and things like that. They were still beautiful churches. They weren't these elaborate cathedrals, but they were beautiful in their simplicity. And it's like, we can have a simple, you know, home or a simple wardrobe or a simple vehicle or whatever, you know, but our simple tastes, but it can still be beautiful. So it's not like we're talking about everything gold covered and gaudy. It's right. Just we've even lost
it's not
that
like Trump's
though.
Trump's home per se, right?
Golden toilet. Now, I mean, I'd be okay with, I got some golden bathroom, but
or the TBN set, some of those like kind of gold, gold plated thrones on there.
I grew up on TBN. Yeah. I cut my teeth on Christian television on TBN. But anyways, so yeah, there's a lot to, I think, explore there. And I think we will continue to have this conversation as a nation and as a world as we watch Notre Dame be rebuilt. I hope we do, at least. So
yeah, I was a little nervous when I saw, is it Macron? I can't, I always forget the
Emmanuel Macron.
Macron. Mm-hmm. He said that it was going to be a committee getting together to rebuild Notre Dame. Anytime
okay,
I hear
well,
the,
what do you mean by any, a committee?
Yeah, anytime
please
I hear the word
committee,
I didn't really read the article. Okay. But I saw committee and it made me very nervous.
Right, like, is this all of a sudden going to have
especially
to
a European committee. I mean, the EU
never
committee.
Never trust the European committee.
Right. So they've got some pretty generic architecture over there in sort of modern Europe compared to what they did. And I think that's kind of one of our big larger points. And it's kind of disturbing to see sometimes just sort of you know, as culture collapses in some way, obviously the beauty is going to collapse. And I don't mean to put down our culture, because I think there's some good things going on in our culture. And there's some great technological advances, obviously, and global poverty is continuing to be eradicated in this world, which is a good thing through because of freedom and because of free markets. But, you know, you do see sort of that generic buildings and stuff, and architecture is more for practicality and space and sustainability and green stuff rather than, you know, ultimate beauty and truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I like how I appreciate that you said that, you know, it's not we're bashing our present age and having some
romanticizing. No, I think it's dumb to do that. I
past.
Hate when people, you know, and I make fun of kids too, but I hate, Brooke, when someone says kids are so stupid today or kid. Well, if we don't teach them stuff about our history and we don't do that properly in the schools, it's not fair to blame them. You
right,
know? If
yeah.
they don't know who George Washington is or they don't know who James Madison is, well, if no one ever taught them that, then it's not their fault. They're still smart kids.
Yeah.
You know, I hate when people just blame kids. And I have a tendency to do it every once in a while where I'm like, kids today are so stupid, you know, compared to when I was a kid. But if no one's teaching them these things, we can't blame them.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be held accountable for what you don't know. So anyways, but you know what? Something that happened today that I think or this week that's noteworthy. And if you're listening to this later on, you've probably heard about it and have read some headlines already. But that's that today Governor Cooper vetoed the Born Alive abortion bill at the state level. So if you recall, back in January, the whole infanticide conversation began to make its way into the national conversation because of Governor Ralph Northam from Virginia's comments on a radio program wherein it seemed to indicate that he was defending infanticide or at least apologizing for it in some ways and making allowances. And so New York also passed a very, very radical up until birth abortion law. And so this was something that has been in the forefront. North Carolina, our polling has indicated, is continuing to see progress when it comes to identifying as pro-life. So those are some good indications that we're trending in the right direction based on our latest poll results that you can see on our website. But Governor Cooper was given a bill by the Senate and House that passed in both chambers that would protect children who had survived a botched abortion and make sure that they received medical care, as well as that those who, if somebody denied that child medical care, a medical professional, if they denied them that they would be criminally prosecuted. So he vetoed that. Ray, what do we make of that? Why would he do that?
Well, just from a cultural perspective, it's sad because I kind of had the feeling that if it was about animals or protecting animals, that it's probably a bill that he would have signed. But because of how politicized the abortion debate has become, and the left has, you know, doubled down, tripled down, quadrupled down on, you know, they've gone so far to the left on abortion. It used to be, you know, in the Clinton era, and you may even remember this, Brooke, it was safe, legal, and rare, right? That was their big talking point on abortion, is that it had to be safe, legal, and rare. And they really stressed that rare part, at least from their words, not from their actions, but they at least stressed it from a cultural standpoint, because we all inherently knew that abortion's wrong. I mean, it's wrong to kill a child. You can make arguments all day about the freedom of choice and freedom of a woman or a female, and that's understandable, but it's wrong to kill somebody. It's wrong to kill a child, and it's certainly doubly wrong to deliver a child that survives an abortion. And then, you know, going back on those Northam comments where he says, well, we have the discussion with the doctor and the mom, and then we'll decide if we want to save this child. I mean, you know, that's like barbarian almost.
And then many pro-choicers defended his comments and said, well, that's not really what he meant. And, you know, really behind it all, I think the underlying premise that they hold is that a life is only really worth living or worth anything to society if it's a wanted life.
Yeah.
And that obviously we know that's the case for before birth. That's how our laws recognize life as only being valued if the mother wants the child up until birth. But then even Northam's comments seem to push that envelope to after birth as well. And there are some people that do defend post-birth abortions up to even 2 years of age. There's a Princeton professor, Donald Bryson, our president, and I were talking about this on the radio this morning, and he had cited that man who was defending abortion.
So it's like if you didn't regret the pregnancy before birth, but if you still regret it after birth, then you could do something about
right,
it.
Because in his mind, yeah, if the child is not sentient yet, then there's no reason, then the child hasn't reached full human status. And so we move these goalposts. So if we can't recognize that that child is a child starting at conception, then there's always a way to move the line to some other arbitrary point in gestation or point in that child's growing up years. And we've even seen this even after someone is a fully developed adult, if they are in a vegetative state like Terri Schiavo was, where mm-hmm. she just wasn't able to feed herself or drink, but she otherwise was healthy, but she couldn't do those things. So because people deemed her not having a good enough quality of life, then the courts allowed them to starve her to death. And right. So this is just, it's a culture of death, and many, many people don't understand that.
You know what's, this is what I do understand about it, and you know what's happening, Brooke, is that we're really repaganizing the West. We talked a little bit about the West, what's going on in our culture, you know, a lot of positive things, but one of the negative things is we're becoming repaganized in many senses. I mean, you know, we weren't a quote-unquote Christian nation in the sense that we were a theocracy, but we had a large moral strand and virtue, and the founders always talked about the importance of virtue for a republic to survive, that it had to be strong. But what we're doing is, in this whole repaganizing process, is, you know, the gospel went out with the Apostle Paul, and got Easter coming up here, and it went through the Western world, and it spread, and now it's constricting back. You see, the gospel is very powerful in places like Africa. It's very powerful in places like Asia, but it's restricting back in many areas of the West. And so I think what you're seeing is, you know, what did pagans do? A lot of pagans killed their children. They killed old people. They killed people that were deemed not sufficient for life. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing some of that return to us again. I mean, so to me, it's just heartbreaking to see, because, you know, abortion is one of those huge, one of those huge areas that is impacted by this.
Mm-hmm. And what you were saying just reminded me, and by the way, that professor's name was Peter Singer. So thanks, John, for letting me know about that. But so we're looking at people from more of a utilitarian standpoint. And like you pointed out, in ancient Rome, that was kind of the look of the way people saw it as well. I mean, that's why they had slaves, right? That's why they owned people. People were looked at from a utilitarian standpoint and not having any eternal value. And I think that that also plays into that beauty discussion, right? Our longing for the true good and beautiful, because the true good and beautiful can't always be measured in quantitative standards, right? Or it can't always be seen as utilitarian or useful or something that increases productivity. It's just beautiful, is just something that is worthy because it has inherent value outside of any value a human being has assigned to it. And so that is why life matters. That is why this bill mattered. And that is why it is an incredible disappointment that Governor Cooper vetoed it. Instead of just letting it pass into law, he didn't even have to sign onto it and approve it. But not only did he just, you know, step back.
He's so beholden politically, I think, to these leftist groups. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know his deeper personal view on this issue. I imagine that he probably agrees with his veto from a personal standpoint. But I think that's what's happened with a lot of these politicians on the left is they may be more ambivalent to a bill like this because they're so emboldened financially to Planned Parenthood, but it has lots of money, lots of donors. And, you know, that's why we've seen so many arguments going out forward now in our culture about, you know, regretting your kids or not mm-hmm. wanting kids, or kids aren't sustainable for the environment. Kids are the worst thing you can do for our environment. So, you know, I've got this pantheism where you're worshiping the earth over another human being,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, so it's very bizarre to watch. If you're a Christian and you have a deeper understanding of these issues, it should be very bizarre and alien for you to have these views. And if you're not, then maybe it's not. Or even if you're some kind of theist, you don't even have to be Christian. But if you have these sort of deeper transcendent values, this should all sound very alien to you, these sort of debates. And it should be something that you should mourn to some degree.
Yeah, absolutely. So Civitas Institute will be releasing a statement shortly regarding Governor Cooper's veto. But we applaud those brave senators that did take a stand, and the legislators, the House, the representatives, and took a stand for life and making sure that this bill was presented. And hopefully the veto can be overridden.
Yeah.
And we'll see.
It may hurt Cooper in some ways from a political perspective if it's not overridden, because it could be more of a campaign issue going forward. It may be a campaign. It'll probably be a campaign issue either way. Mm-hmm. But if it's not overridden, it'll be probably a little bit even more of a campaign issue.
Yeah.
So we'll have more on that and how it shakes out politically at Civitas.
Yeah. So let's pivot over to the Mueller report, because that has been making national headlines all day long. For the past 2 years, right? I mean, all we have heard about is Trump-Russia collusion. That's all we've heard about for 2 years, half of his presidency. And, you know,
I don't think we're done with it either.
We're not done with it. But the thing is, I am so relieved and so grateful that based on the findings of this investigation, no U.S. citizen was guilty. There's no indication that a U.S. citizen colluded, including the Trump campaign or any other citizen. And that is a sigh of relief for me, whether it was Barack Obama that was under investigation
or
Trump. I don't care. I'm just grateful that none of them did.
To me, it seems awful that you would be so politicized that you'd actually want a presidential candidate to collude so you could see him melt down. To me, that is so not just irresponsible, but it says a lot about you as a citizen in the sense that you're willing to put your partisan politics over the good of the country.
Yeah.
And that's really, mm-hmm. you know, how much you ever hate Donald Trump or not. I mean, to me, that's just sad. I mean, you wouldn't want Barack Obama mm-hmm. colluding with Iran or Russia or something.
No, absolutely not. And
because you don't like him politically.
Right. Because you think about the good of the country. And regardless of if that president has a D or an R next to his or her name, I want them to do the best job that they can for the United States, not in collusion with another country. So that was one of the key.
What country would you collude with, Brooke, though, if you were a president?
What country would I collude with? I don't even think that's an okay question to ask.
I'm just saying let's say you wanted really good Thai food. Would you collude with Thailand?
Could I collude with a business and that be like the Mars company, the Hershey makers and Reese's? Like free Reese's for life. We'll talk about extra Oval Office visits. I don't know.
It's easy. Like we laugh about corruption though, but when you get really powerful, I imagine the temptation's a lot higher. I mean, I'm very, you know, clean and unsullied because, you know, my power level's a lot lower. But if it was, you know, up here,
that
I might
have
problems.
That is why the Lord has not let Ray get higher than
He's humbled me for a reason. Thank you, Lord, for keeping me humble.
Thank you for not putting me in the position that I could jeopardize my country's safety. Okay. Anyways, moving on. So let's cover a couple of these major findings, though, before we have to wrap up. This half hour has gone so fast.
Whoa,
it's party day. That's why. Woohoo. So the main finding that William Barr, Attorney General, issued during this press conference was he emphasized and reemphasized that there was no collusion between the Trump administration or any other American and Russia. However, he also emphasized that Russian intent, either by the private company that was behind the disinformation campaign or the Russian government. They were kind of almost one and the same, the Russian government and this private company. Their intent was to sow seeds of discord through a disinformation campaign. So that was the Russian players did steal Clinton emails. They were leaked. Some of them were leaked through WikiLeaks. So Russian interference is 100% confirmed. There's no doubt about that.
You could tell on Facebook to me some of those articles that were like clearly fake. You could tell almost in a way that there's some kind of foreign, just sort of foreign.
Didn't have American flavor to
it. I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but yeah, flavor to it. I mean, it just, you could tell it was like some of them were written in broken English and stuff.
Well, that's like those Facebook friend requests that I get from these fake guys that look like they like stole this military service member's face or someone else's face and then like put it on like this other guy's uniform, and then it says location Kuwait or Saudi Arabia, and then it's got all this like Arabic words, and it's like so obvious to someone in the United States that that's not real. And a lot of those ads were like that, I think. And it's usually the stuff
your parents are sharing on Facebook.
Yeah, some people fall for that stuff. I don't know. But anyways, if you're watching and you fell for that, I'm sorry, but please don't do that again. Okay, so another thing that the Mueller probe or Attorney General Barr,
William Barr, yeah,
discovered was that President Trump did not exercise any executive privilege when it came to redactions.
Right.
So it's a 400-page report. Parts of it are redacted, but none of the redactions that occurred or items that were redacted were a result of the president saying, I'm exercising executive privilege and I'm asking for you to redact this. So anything that was redacted was done so by the Attorney General's office, not the executive branch. So that's another discovery. But what do you think about this? Do you think, okay, it's clear that impeachment proceedings would be unlikely as a result of this. But do you think that this is still going to hang around Trump's neck and actually harm him in 2020?
I don't think so from a political standpoint. I do think Democrats are obviously going to keep digging because their intent, there's a lot of their base that really wants an obstruction of justice charge brought forth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's hard to me, it seems like in not being an attorney and I've studied a little bit of law and had a wife that went to law school, but it seems hard to, and I know you can do it, but it's hard to get an obstruction of justice charge when there's no crime.
Right.
You can still do it. You can still obstruct justice if there's no crime. It's still possible. But to me, it doesn't look like there's enough there to really get an obstruction of justice charge. Now, yes, does Trump say dumb stuff on Twitter? Does Trump impede the investigations with some of his comments? Maybe. But, you know, Mueller's a big boy. He's been in D.C. for a long time. He was head of the FBI. He knows how to run an investigation. He's not going to let the president influence him, and nor should he. And so I don't think there's enough there to kind of pin this on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I'm glad you touched on the obstruction part because I didn't get to that. But the special counsel did not make prosecutorial recommendation. Although Barr and Mueller did have some disagreements on, I guess, certain legal theories surrounding obstruction, because it is a vague area, like what you were saying. Nothing was so clear and dry that it was easy to say, okay, this is obstruction and we can actually prosecute. And so that was another thing that the Democrats were really hoping on, and I think they'll continue to push that one.
Oh, for sure.
But the collusion story, I don't think they can push anymore, but the obstruction one, they'll try to...
Yeah, if the economy keeps ticking away pretty good... And there's been folks, I think, predicting that Donald Trump's going to get reelected. I think that's a real possibility. I think a lot of people wouldn't have thought that at the very beginning of his term. But it could be a real possibility, especially if the economy remains strong. And so I think they're going to, Democrats and some on the left, are going to get more and more desperate with how they approach this president, how they go after him. And, you know, the media, I think, unfortunately, because we need them as a watchdog in this country, has lost a lot of credibility on this report. I think they're going to continue to lose some of the credibility if you just get on social media and see some of the comments by, I've seen in the last, from a Time magazine writer and Washington Post reporter, some of the stuff they're saying about the report before it's even released. You know, and this is what got them in a lot of trouble, is they kept quoting unnamed sources. Unnamed sources said this. Unnamed sources said this about the Mueller report. Well, all those unnamed sources that they won't go on record turned out to be wrong for the most part.
Anything could be an unnamed source. My bowl of Cheerios at breakfast could be an unnamed source.
There's, you know, as someone who's worked in journalism, there's an important there's an important place for unnamed sources, but it became so abused in this Mueller report that it almost became right. comical, really.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, that is your brief rundown of the Mueller report's findings, as well as an explanation of what Governor Cooper vetoed and Ray's 40th birthday reflection. So we appreciate you guys joining us this week, and we hope you will join us again next week. But in the meantime, Godspeed, and have a great rest of your week.
Yeah, thank you. Check out our content, ncivitas.org. Thank you.